Alright, time for another DriveFysics.com video presentation. Kind of doing tomorrow's video today, as I have obligations tomorrow. Ugh. But anyway, so a couple of comments, you know, they're just, it's just so, ugh. And so this is why I have to do videos over and over again, is because people really don't pay any attention to what's in the videos. So this is on the cause of gravity, a video I did maybe 3 years or 2 years ago, and you know, it has basically the same argument I made in yesterday's video, but whatever. So this is by Buddy Sackett, which is a Farley technique. It's just playing little word games, so it's probably just a Farley sock account, but at least in some sense that would be revealing, because we'll get some idea, you know, what the big Farley philosophy is. You know, what he contends reality to be made out of. You know, what kind of bullshit he's defending that, frankly, he doesn't wish to have scrutinized as closely as he wishes to scrutinize other people's arguments. And clearly he can't do it in any kind of civil manner. So, I mean, lots of downside here. But anyway, I'll play with the argument. I was going to say you were completely wrong, but you are close. Whatever. Okay, useless tripe. So that works on you? If somebody says that to you, that works on you? So if I just said those words on some video you make, you'll figure out that you're an idiot? Yeah, I don't think so. Here's a major problem with your idea. Infinity has already occurred and your mass is collecting mass. No, it isn't. So all masses would be infinite in size. So, I mean, I can go to the video and I'll just show that, you know, I clearly point out that there are reflections. And so the only mass the object collects in terms of momentum, that is extra momentum, if he didn't mean mass, or collecting force, would be whatever your bias is. You can only collect the bias, and that causes you to move. The faster, the more bias an electron is in, the faster it moves in that field of bias. That is, there's more pressure on one side than another side. When the pressures equalize, the bias is gone, and there's nothing sticking to the electron, technically. So in case this is his argument, it was clearly
sticks to the electron. And now it's pushing it, carrying it, you could argue. And now the electron will move slower than the speed of light, some percentage slower. And obviously the little bit of force now is stuck moving the same speed as the electron. It can't go any faster than what it's pushing. And so in a sense, you know, the electron will move a distance, and the piece of force will move less distance than it would have moved if it didn't hit the electron. So clearly the force, if you were to measure it with some device out here, and you didn't know anything about electrons existing, you would say the force has slowed down.
Right. And then I go on to say, okay, well, I better get the other time code. Yeah, it should be back. So I say a force bit sticks.
Moves the object, and then another force hits. You know, some piece of force from the opposite direction hits. This force reflects, and this force reflects, and this stops moving. It goes back to being stationary.
Right, which means it hasn't collected any extra mass, or it doesn't have any extra anything anymore. It's just a naked electron, so to speak. So only a bias in a direction can create an extra amount in a direction. And when it encounters an equal amount of force opposing that force, it will lose its force. There will be a reflection. The momentums will interact like two steel balls hitting each other. They will leave. That's simple. So anyway, just pointing out that, you know, these arguments are in the videos. You have to pay attention. It is physics, you know. It's not some music theory or art theory or, you know, some other mushy crap. It's, you know, everything, all the little ducks have to be exactly in a row or it doesn't work. It is mathematical. It is very clinically, technically precise, it has to be. You can't be a little bit off and a little bit off, and, you know, it doesn't really work as well. Okay. All right, so there's no infinite size problem. You believe the universe is getting bigger, that's your problem. If it was all getting bigger at an equal rate, it wouldn't even be perceivable, I guess. You know, if the space was expanding the same time as the matter was expanding, we wouldn't be able to notice it, but whatever. All right, first you must realize no poles exist. So, I mean, right in the video, I write the word push universe right on the board. So, who are you talking to? Okay. You seem somewhat to understand this. Yes, so I don't somewhat understand it. I overtly state it as an absolute fact that there's no concept of pull in the real universe except as an inverted push. Nothing ever pulls anything anywhere. It always pushes it somewhere. But you are saying electrons. Yes, and protons. I'm saying those are the elemental bits, electrons and protons. So just keep ignoring what was in the video. Okay, how does that plus and minus attract one another? Well, that's another argument in another video. Okay, the video was on the subject of gravity. Gravity doesn't need charge and magnetism. Okay, so yes, I didn't talk about charge and magnetism because the subject of the video in capital letters is on the cause of gravity. Yeah, all right, anyway. So he says, here's your answer. Yeah, everybody loves people who do that. Read this. Fuck you. Understand it and ask questions if they are needed. So who needs this? Again, this rhetoric you think works on somebody. Talking like that to anyone on earth gets you results, positive results. This is how you positively interact with other people. This kind of proves it's Farley, right? Because we know he doesn't interact with any other humans. He just trolls. Do not argue. It is the answer. The, in capital letters. That's unlike Farley, to go to the trouble to hit the caps lock. Maybe not 100% complete, but much closer than anything so far. I mean, just, you know, what a runaway that is. I'm just going to run away from my, hey, I figured it all out and got it really solid, except it's not really solid. It's kind of, you know, just depends on how you define solid. So if, you know, diarrhea is solid, then yeah, he's got a solid theory. Anyway, space is filled with ether particles. Says you. Ether theories don't work. They have insane drag problems. They create huge, irregularities in the transfer of everything. It just really doesn't work. The idea of force having all the energy and matter just being a conduit works. I don't need your ether theory. And if I used an ether theory, I'd be in big trouble because all those dead ether particles would just get in the way. They would create insane amounts of drag, anyway, which are pieces of matter floating within space. So whatever that even means. who knows? Pieces of what kind of matter? There's no point in talking about it. Okay, well, I don't know why you believe in an ether. You have to explain the history of why. What about that kind of concept of saying everything, there's a bunch of something between everything and somehow I'm pushing somethings? Where is there any evidence that anything really moves that way in the universe? And again, if you go to wave particle duality crap and the photon experiments, I'll argue, well, that's only because they've been perversely described in such simplistic and inaccurate terms. But if you understood them as they really are, there's no room for any wave theory. It's clearly vectors. It's clearly array theory that explains photons. This ether is created by black holes. So you're just making this part right up, right? You're not going to be able to link to any evidence demonstrating there's any evidence that black holes are excreting anything called an ether. But whatever. Via compressive forces breaking matter down, whatever that means. Breaking it down into what? Could you draw a picture of it breaking down into something? What does it break down? So you make a bunch of little particles by crushing matter, and somehow you excrete the little particles, but you're not excreting them at a velocity because that would cause other stuff to move, and then a black hole wouldn't be a gravity well. It would be like a sun. It would be producing a bunch of energy that was pushing things away. The matter is very sparsely populated within space. So whatever, so all the crushed little bits are sparse. So how do they do anything if they're sparse? This means that the particles are able to be traveling in all directions at all times. Well, I would say force can do that. You can just say the particles are bits of force. There's no ether holding everything together. The forces don't interact with each other, which is proven by almost every experiment ever conducted by human beings. You can't make a ray of light bang into a ray of light. All right, anyway, all things are made of nucleons. So this is just more mush. Well, obviously there's nucleuses in cells, and there's nucleuses inside of our understanding of atoms, that there's a compressed place where there's electrons and protons, and then there's a place on the outside that there's more electrons, because the place inside has twice as many protons as it has electrons. If you think of a neutron as being an electron and a proton, then you can understand that most atoms have many more protons than they has electrons in the nucleus. Therefore, the nucleus is on net positive, and that's why the electrons are orbiting. But anyway, which are today called neutrons and protons. So again, we already know a neutron is a proton and an electron. That's what it decays into. So why is this even a kind of conversation? Really shouldn't be. These two entities are actually the same entity in a different orientation within the atom. So you're just, like I said, you're just making this shit up. You're not explaining how any of this, you have any facts, that there's any evidence or any experiments that indicate any of this crap. The weight difference that is supposed to exist is from internal versus external flow of ether. So somehow the ether flows different through the proton than the neutron. No, the weight difference between the neutron and the proton is the electron. It's a tiny weight difference created by the electron. Okay, so here's the proof of force between two objects. So I don't even know what that means. You're going to prove it with this little gibberish? I don't think so. Given mass m and n, there are m and n neutrons within each. So whatever. So he's just saying we have two different objects. One of them has a different amount of pieces to be moved. Shadows are formed between all the nucleons. So now he's saying that the nucleus of the atoms are casting shadows. Shadows of what? If it's an ether, how fast is the ether moving? What is the ether? You didn't explain any of it. I mean, I'm arguing that there's a bunch of active force moving the speed of light. And that force can be reflected off of objects, and then obviously it's like a light, and you could have shadows. But again, even when you have shadows, you still have to explain how the objects interact in inverse manner, like with charge. As you said in your video, the shadows move force from facing sides, so you're using the same sort of argument. But obviously, the shadow argument isn't an argument I'm really making. I'm not making that the shadow is created by nothing. I'm saying the shadow is being created by the absorption of energy. So it's not a hard shadow. It's a soft shadow for each electron. It's just a little tiny bit of movement it does, absorbing a tiny bit of the total momentum of a piece of force. How much force? Well, it depends on G, which is the loss of force in the shadow side. And the loss through what process? You're not explaining how the force is lost. So he says, say the word shadow means the force is what? The ether's reflecting, or what's the ether doing? So you didn't have any explanation here. As the shadow travels away from each nucleon, they collapse as shadows do because they have no opposing force. It's just quite useless. This collapse is because of the R squared rule. The R squared rule is created by creating an even pressure around any spherical object. So the R squared rule is what the sun is doing right now in terms of how it produces light. It produces photons at the inverse square rule. So it's exactly the opposite of gravity. So it's a perfect model for depicting what's happening is rays, okay, emanating from something. Well, if you want to do gravity, you just do rays heading towards the center of its mass. And that effect can be created by any mechanism that absorbs more of the energy of the stuff coming in and excretes less from itself because of that absorption of energy. So we get G divided by R squared. This describes the shadow loss of force at a distance. Yeah, I know, but that's not very useful. That's like just saying Lesage or mock gravity. Well, you still have to explain drag and all this other crap that comes up. Now we take all the shadows and apply the G divided by r squared to get the sum of the shadow's effect, blah, blah, blah. So he has mass times, so the mass of one object times the mass of the other object to describe the total force. And I'd argue that at best you have to plus them, not times them, but whatever. Which is Newton's equation, and of course this isn't quite right because you need to account for the travel speed of the shadow. So again, the travel speed of the shadow really wouldn't have anything to do with it. The pressure is going to be the pressure. It doesn't matter when the pressure arrives, so I don't think that's even necessary to fiddle with. Now, before you think you're clever and ask how each shadow knows where the other particle is, realize that the shadow is being cast all around the nucleon in all directions. So that's just another way of saying somehow the absorption is happening through the mechanism of passing through the object. And so everything gets absorbed in all directions because it's going through the object is where its degrade takes place. Well, again, you have to explain how did it get degraded by going through the matter. So what's your theory? My theory accounts for it because the matter bits, the electrons and protons, have to be physically pushed. And the physical pushing part means that the force loses energy. The force loses momentum. And I show it by the difference between the force would have gone from here to here if it didn't push the matter. If it's pushing matter, then it goes from here to here in a certain amount of time. That means effectively its speed of light is no longer the speed of light. And it's effectively lost a huge amount of momentum because it's moving much slower pushing the matter. So I'm explaining how, okay, that shadow gets created in all directions, which happens to look a lot like warped space field if you track destinies and large number of nucleons. So again, this really doesn't have anything to do with anything called a nucleon. It has to do with the nucleon is only the individual particles that make it up. There's no such thing as to draw a line around electrons and neutrons, I mean protons and neutrons, and then say, well, there's my line around them, that's an object. It isn't. The individual neutrons and are made out of electrons and protons, and it's the individual electrons and protons that are doing all of the action. All that is the universe is happening by electrons and protons moving. What the fuck happened to the comment? I don't know. What'd I click? All right. Let's see. Traveling in all directions. So all things are made of nucleons. Going to okay, same atom. The weight difference that is supposed to exist is from internal. We already did that part, right? Yes. Much force. The shadow. We already did that crap, right? Sorry. As a shadow travels away from each node, they collapse. As shadows do, they have no opposing force. Okay, so, yeah, that just doesn't make any sense. Which is Newton's equation. Yeah, we did that, too. Okay, we finished it. I can tell. All right. So, I like your idea of particles sticking and causing a delay. So, it's close to being completely wrong, but no, you like parts of it. Oh, okay. That makes sense. This can't be what is happening because you must realize ether has to be incredibly hard. So again, I don't have to realize that ether is even a rational world. You might as well just say, you know, God blood, or you know, some other stupid phrase. It's completely superfluous to the function. Einstein said that, you know, ether is just superfluous. There's no use for it. It's not necessary to understand the universe. It doesn't play any role. Just make the active ether a force and you're done. You don't need to make it any more complicated than that. And has perfect momentum reflection, whatever that means. So again, what's reflecting where? If it's reflecting, then how is it moving things? Where would it lose momentum to? Obviously, momentum has to be exchanged by objects. So again, you're just failing to understand. There's only two things that can happen in the universe, right? One thing is not moving, another thing hits it and moves. Or you have an explosion, and you push both things with the explosion. But that's about it. There's nothing else that can possibly happen. You have to conserve the force. If matter's moving, it's using a force, and it has force to give to something else. But that's it. There's no other source of motion except force and matter that's moving, which is also force. If it's moving, it's occupying, it's using some force. Force is stuck to it. And you can release that force or absorb that force. All right, hard perfect reflection. There would be, where would it lose momentum to? So there's no way you can understand what you're talking about. So, you know, perfectly hard ether hitting electrons and protons or something, they would scatter. Okay, the part I like about your idea is the delay, not the stickiness. Well, frankly, you can't have the delay without the stickiness. There's no slowing the force down if the force reflects. So the only way the force can be slowed down is that you have to make it do something. And I think the idea of it pushing the matter is a perfectly valid do. That's a perfectly, you know, reasonable job it has. You know, that used up its time, and so it couldn't get to its other chores. One must realize that atoms do not just exist without an external power source. So this is just more baby talk, in my opinion. Yes, I mean, if you want to say that if without pressure nothing would move towards each other and you couldn't make an atom, duh, okay? But if you want to tell me that atoms are somehow got their own source of energy and it's not going to be made out of exactly the same thing that's pushing every other bit in the universe. I mean, the stuff in an atom is just the fact that it's like magnets arranging themselves. The forces between them can be in tension and they can just stay in that position forever. I can put two magnets facing, you know, drill a hole in the magnets, put them on a stick, and I can have them opposing each other and they'll sit there opposing each other at a distance for, like, forever. One must realize that atoms do not exist without an external power source, whatever. And giving you credit, you seem to realize that ether is light. Well, I obviously don't realize it as ether. So again, I would still like to understand, why do you think you need this word ether? What is its function? I'm saying I can just flip dominoes. I don't need the dominoes to bang into each other. I can just flip a domino from one place to another place. Why do you insist that there's ether or whatever that is? And I would argue again, if you're going to make matter have the momentum and ether be dead, then the matter has to push the ether, okay, which means that matter could never move anywhere in space because it'd be pushing ether constantly while it's moving, so everything would be dragged to a halt. The force has to be eternal, and that makes perfect sense. That's the conservation of energy. The force is all you're doing is transferring stuff, moving this little stuff that can move in a direction, and you just create biases in objects, and they will move in the direction of the bias. All right, is light, magnetics, and gravity, which more advanced than most? So you're again pointing out how my theory is accurately revealing the fact that these things are obviously connected, but they're obviously connected so obviously that I can't take any credit for figuring out that, oh yeah, they all move the same speed, so they're probably made out of the same thing. I think the shapes of the atom structure creates magnetic flows, whatever that means. So you have given me no reason to even understand what a magnetic would be, let alone a magnetic flow. Within the atom and cause delay on the emission of the ether. So even this, right? The emission of what ether? I thought you said black holes emitted ether. You know, regular atoms can emit ether. All right. I can also tell you why black holes are black. And we don't even have any, we have no picture, you know, real picture of a black hole showing it being any color whatsoever. So the whole thing is a pile of crap. Okay, the word black was used to say light isn't escaping. But even that's a silly argument, in my opinion, frankly, that you can create enough, that there's any evidence that light is even bent by gravity is, in my opinion, undeniable. All of the lensing images are mathematical rubbish. And the Eddington experiment's never been repeated, so there's just no evidence for any of this theory. And that's all theory. So again, why are you glued to the idea that this stupid thing exists, this black hole thing, this infinite amount of pressure you can create? You just argued that the energy has to come from the outside. Do you think the outside can create an infinite amount of pressure? All right. And the Big Bang never occurred, and the true cause of redshift, but only if you are interested. I'm likely not interested. I'm arguing my theory against the conventional theory. I don't gain much by explaining to you why your theory's a pile of crap. Your theory clearly isn't conventional, and you're just saying that you have some version of a counter argument, and yet, you know, you don't have 10 years of videos. You don't have anything I can look at to see what the fuck you're talking about. You have nothing. This crap, you think four paragraphs is all you need, and you can convince somebody of a completely different explanation of all interactive physics. No, I'll just let you know. There's no chance that's going to happen. All right. So, enough of that comment. And so we have another pile of shit. I'll find that. All right, so this is another stupid comment, frankly. the arrogance of people. So he posts this comment, and then he's going to post another comment on the other side of it. So I'll read this one again, even though we've already done this. The bullet did not have any upward momentum to give the steel ball. Obviously, it doesn't matter whether it has upward momentum. It just matters whether it has momentum. As I pointed out, it's the angle of the surface or the angle at which you're hitting the center of mass. How much you're off the center of mass is going to decide how it leaves. And obviously, its shape matters. If it was a square versus a sphere, the objects will leave differently. One will spin if it's a square, and it'll leave straight if it's a sphere. I mean, these are just facts. I mean, pool tables have been around a long time. We can see those kind of collisions. This just isn't even debatable, so I don't know what you're talking about. So how does the bullet know to go down? How does the bullet knows to go down and the metal ball knows to go up? Yeah, okay. It's not even written very well, so I should just take it for that. Without energy coming from somewhere. So obviously the energy is already in the momentum. And you're just going to distribute the momentum based on the surfaces, their shape, and based on how far off you are the center of the mass. Okay, so he says, I don't have any evidence, which is a big problem, frankly, in science. If you don't have any evidence, that's a big problem. But the only thing the energy could come from is the metal balls themselves. So this whole thing, we know where the energy came from. The speeding bullet has the energy. So I don't understand why there's even a conversation. Even if I gave the energy to the steel balls and had them crash into a non-moving bullet, the results are going to be the same. So this goes back to Walter Lewin's air track experiment you deny, which it can't possibly have anything to do with Walter Lewin's experiment. And frankly, I deny that it's a real experiment, yes, in the sense that free energy is a ludicrous proposition. All right, so, I mean, what's your opinion of free energy? Do you really think there is such a thing as free energy? I mean, that you can actually make, like, you could make free matter. Like, I could just actually have an empty test tube and I pour in 100 masses and I end up with 200 masses pop out. All right, using the same technique of atoms gravitating each other, you can show why no momentum is used to give bullet downward momentum. So obviously the effects of gravity are so minuscule in this example of a bullet speeding. The amount of gravity affecting the bullet in any direction is, it's rather minuscule. I mean, when you're sighting a gun, you'd only have to make a tiny little compensation for gravity. Tiny. And the steel ball upward momentum. The most they can give them is angular momentum or vibration. Well, clearly the vibration is ultimately going to decide the direction. So the only thing under debate is what direction the impact took place in. And as pointed out, it can be in any direction. So if I want to, in the pool ball example, if I want to knock the ball into the side pocket, I can shoot the ball almost horizontal to the ball and make it go into the side pocket. I mean, so it just depends on how peripheral my impact is. And again, the shape of the ball does matter. If it was a square ball, okay, I'm going to have a hard time getting it to go in that direction. But because of the angle of the surface of the ball, you can get it to go almost horizontal. You can draw the ball and the bullet. Follow the motion through the ball, and I know you will immediately try to draw the arrows upwards. Well, no, I'll immediately follow the mass. And the fact is the surface impact matters. So the fact is the bullet hits a steel round ball. If it was a square ball, okay, the bullet wouldn't have been able to transfer the energy in a direction. So you're just paying absolutely no attention to the shape of the object, which is not brilliant of you. Okay, me. But be fair and draw the arrows in the direction of the momentum. I'll draw them in the direction that the momentum is going to be acquired in, which could be any direction, and it just depends on how fast they're moving. And again, the pool table's been around for hundreds of years. I had one in my basement as a kid. Okay, it's the first thing I bought with my newspaper money. Was a pool table. So I've been here and done this. You're not going to tell me it doesn't happen. I know what happens. All right. So he links to a video that basically just points out exactly what I'm saying. So we have, you know, the guy doesn't draw it perfect. So he's saying there's a very peripheral collision between two objects. So the top one here is moving and the other one's not. I don't know if you can see that. Yeah, you can see that. You can see this part of it. So the idea is the ball comes in, hits another one. This one's moving this way. This one was standing still. This one's going to move at some angle. That's what they want to calculate. This angle is given to them with the amount of momentum it has. And yes, from that information, you can figure out how much of a contact you must have had, because if 99% of the energy goes this way, then you know that this had to be a pretty small contact. All right. And so it's going to have a high angle in terms of its direction. But whatever. Clearly, it's showing how the balls will interact and there will be a direction. And again, they have to be spheres for any to be able to calculate this. If they're not spheres, you're going to be in big trouble trying to calculate. All right, so back to the crap. So this is just so pointless. You think you're going to be able to describe this in words, okay? And by using somebody else's diagram that clearly illustrates exactly what I said. So I don't even understand where you see a dispute here. You don't have to understand the math. I do understand the math. All you need to know is that the initial x velocity is equal to the final x velocity. Do you think that's what's true in this diagram? You think that's what this math is saying? That in the x direction, it's going to be the same velocity in the x direction? You think so? No, that's not going to be possible. They're both going to leave in new directions, and their total velocity, inverse to the fact that there's double the mass, let's say, they're the same weight object. The total velocity is going to have to equal the initial velocity because they're the same mass objects. You don't get that part? Yeah, they're the same mass objects. So whatever momentum you end up going in this direction, whatever direction this direction will be, which could be numerous directions, it's those two are going to have to total what you started with in the x direction. You won't have a final that's the same as in the x direction. So you don't even get the math. You'll just have a final on these trajectories. These two trajectories will have to equal what you started with. Like, so let's just say I had two solid objects sitting here and I just had them separated by some distance and I shot another object in between the two. Obviously, you could say if all the energy was to be absorbed, and they both shot off, their total energy would have to be the same, okay, as what I started with. And it clearly wouldn't be in the same direction. It would be clearly in new directions. But whatever. You can't conserve the direction. It's impossible to conserve the momentum in the direction. You're just conserving the total momentum. All right. So, continuing. Going back to this crap. All right. therefore, no x velocity actually participated. Okay. Is equal to the final x velocity. Therefore, no x velocity actually participated to produce the final y velocity. So again, if you really think so, you think it actually went in the y direction for free, and you didn't have to use x direction momentum to go in y direction. So you somehow just made new energy going this way, and you conserved all the energy going this way. That's free energy. It doesn't happen. You don't understand. And either way, you can see that the y component are different from the x component. When there's a collision, there's no, you can't do this component crap anymore. Okay, you're not going to conserve your momentum in a direction. If the cannonball hits something, there's no conservation of the motion in this direction anymore. I mean, if I shoot a cannonball against a brick wall, what happens to the motion in the x direction? Oh, it's gone. Yeah, shit. You see that the ball and bullet can only ever move in the initial direction of the bullet. So that's just nonsense. They're obviously moving in the y direction. They had no motion in the y direction to start with. You can't create y direction motion for free. If you're conserving the energy in the x direction, there's no way you can create any y energy. I mean, I shouldn't have to explain this kind of stuff. If you believe in the conservation of momentum, well, you clearly don't believe it because you think you can create magic free Y momentum and conserve all of your X momentum. So you can keep all of your motion this way and you can make motion this way. You don't see how that's impossible? So there is... So where is the y velocity coming from? Oh, okay, well, at least you're smart enough to ask yourself the question because you just said something so stupid that you have to have an explanation somewhere. The simple answer is it comes from the compression of the metal ball themselves. And how did they get compressed in the y direction? What energy was used to compress them in the y direction to cause them to move in the y direction? Oh, well, that's right. You still got the same problem. You have to use real momentum to create real motion. You can't create any motion without using something's momentum. Nothing can move unless something moves it. Okay, so yes, it is like the metal balls are exploding. So that doesn't make any sense at all, obviously. More accurately, they are behaving like springs. Well, again, springs have to collect energy before they can give energy back. They're not magic. They don't make free energy either. So you have to compress the spring with a pressure in a direction. If I have a Y spring and I have an X spring and I put something in and I'm creating compression in the Y direction, that compression has to come out of motion that started in the X direction. There's no other way to do it. Alright, when something that was under compression expands, it loses energy. It releases energy. It gives back the pressure that was imposed upon it. That's all it's doing. It's just giving back pressure, weight, momentum. It could cool down, or the atoms could form compound. So again, this none of that crap is happening inside of a spring, so this is just absolute nonsense. I don't know which one is happening in the case of the air track experiment. Well, neither one's happening. That's the whole point. It's a very efficient experiment in the sense you've reduced all of the ways you can convert the energy into heat and other nuisances like the motion of air and all that kind of crap. You've made them as streamlined and as efficient as possible to eliminate all the ways you can leak energy. And that's why the experiments are, that's why they work so well. When one object goes in and hits something of the same mass, you get almost all the energy back, 99.99%, a very high percentage. You can see that in Professor Lewin's video, okay? He does that one honestly, all right? And you see quite correctly that there's a tiny fraction, a 0.5%, 0.2% of the energy is lost, okay? So the collision itself, we know, is very efficient. So there's no excuse for saying that, oh, I do the experiment one way, I hit the heavy cart into the light cart, and I lose half my energy. I mean, well, I gain half in the case of that one for kinetic energy. Just nonsense. You can't make energy, you can't really destroy energy. But the most likely scenario is that the metals are forming extremely small compounds. So again, this is just, frankly, baby talk. The metals can be made out of pure aluminum, for fuck's sake. What compound can it possibly create? An oxide, and then it deoxides? What's your argument? Doesn't make any sense. The compound doesn't have to be chemically different from the single atom. Well, so now we're really getting silly. It could behave like water vapor turning into water. So you're going to call water a compound. Well, it is, you know, H2O. But it's obviously a very simple structure. A atomic bond can take an extreme amount of energy to lose, to form, and extreme amounts of energy to gain or break. Okay, so you're just making this crap up. You have no evidence that there's any chemistry going on when a steel ball hits a steel ball, or when a cue ball hits a pool ball, when any of those events happen. There's no chemical crap going on. You can search for this yourself. No, I'm not going to waste my time because it's absolute nonsense. How much energy is in the human punch and how much energy it would take to break a single atomic bond? And again, what does that have to do with anything? You've exaggerated both energies, okay? The mv squared model creates fake energy in both circumstances. So we're still comparing apples and apples. We're just, you know, I'm comparing oranges, you're comparing apples and apples. I'm saying there are no such thing as apples, so you can go compare them all you want, but they're fake numbers. So I say the real number is 50 and 100. You're saying the real number is 300 and 600. So, you know, bullshit on you. If you really want to find out where the extra momentum comes from, I don't have any problem understanding it, but there is no extra momentum. So you're just lying to say there is an extra momentum, because no experiment will produce extra momentum, because extra momentum is free energy. And if any experiment could create free energy, we'd all have one. So again, you just keep talking this shit, that there's any such thing as free momentum. There never can be, there never will be. Then it is up to you to figure out how objects are losing their energy. Well, my obligation isn't to explain why your stupid theory doesn't work. You think the lever going one way, I put the heavy object in, shoot the light object, I'm making free energy. And then if I put the light object in with the 200 joules and I move the heavy object, I lose half the energy. That's your theory. You have to explain why that makes sense. I don't have to, because you have zero evidence that's how the lever works. You have zero evidence that your kinetic energy theory has any merit at all. You have zero evidence. You can't go to its history, because its history is crap. Okay, invented by a religious kook, defended by silly experiments with clay and sand that never proved anything, and then changed by one half in 1840 whatever our bad. We proved a theory that was half off. Yeah, it has a 50% error rate. That was the old theory. You know, I'd say it's still got a 50% error rate, you know, at least. Anyway, it depends on how far you go. All right, there is nothing to gain from ignoring something. So I'm not ignoring anything. You're ignoring the history, which is horrible. Horrible science, horrible, just absolutely no requirement to be demonstrated by physical evidence, okay? Just a magic trick, and you all believed it, and then you believed in a god because of a magic trick. Completely a demonstration of complete dupery and foolishness. You can't now reclimate it because there is still no evidence. You've never proven it takes four times more fuel to go twice as fast. You've never proven a single thing your dopey theory requires to be the truth. And so you have there's absolutely nothing that requires me to explain why you're an idiot beyond just saying, that's just a fact. You're an idiot. I'm not an idiot. I don't have to explain your idiotic facts. I don't have to explain why God doesn't leave footprints. You have to explain why God even is a possible reality. Okay, you can now see happening all around you every day. So again, just a big fat fucking lie. Everything I see around me every day is conservation of momentum. I never see free energy. I never see getting free energy in the Y component with X component energy. Never, ever, ever. The only way I can go in the y direction is to use x component energy to go in the y direction. That's what I see every day. That's what happens every day on a pool table. There is no free energy on a pool table. You're just talking absolute fucking shit. All right. And then he piles on his... So he's already been an absolute asshole. And he just piles on by saying, Farley doesn't make arguments. Yes, that's my quote. You should put it in quotes. He makes tons of arguments. No, he doesn't. And any argument he makes is completely off the subject. He did 40 minutes on a lever and didn't say a damn thing. Didn't explain any way whatsoever why it's okay to have 200 joules on one side and 100 joules on the other side and the lever perfectly oscillates to a balance. Why? How is that possible? He doesn't explain anything. Not a single fucking thing. Not a single one of my arguments are countered by a single fucking thing that lunatic has ever fucking said. That terrorist, let's just be clear, is a terrorist, okay? He's attacked my father, my sisters. He's posted images of my goddamn fucking house. He's posted my address. He's a terrorist, nothing more. You're defending a terrorist, okay? So if I get any personal information on you, I already have your IP address. Should I make that public? Well, I mean, are you such a fucking hypocrite? Here you are hiding your identity. You won't even sign this crap you post, and then you'll defend some motherfucker who sits there and personally invades other people's space and makes overt threats, frankly. I mean, he's got videos with fists punching people and shit. All right, he talks about he's a gun owner and all this other kind of crap. Fuck you, bastard. Get what you fucking deserve, okay? You can't get what you deserve quick enough, you fucker, defending that asshole. That fucking piece of shit. All right. But just like everything else, you ignore. There's no ignoring. I don't watch his videos because I have no obligation to interact with a human being who's threatening my security. I have no obligation to interact with a terrorist, for fuck's sake. I have every right to take appropriate action. And because we don't have a legal system to do a motherfucking thing, okay, then it's going to have to get personal at some point. All right, anyway. Because they prove you wrong. So he hasn't proven anything, so fuck you. You're just such a lying piece of shit. And because you don't understand mathematics, well, that's a lie, too. You clearly don't understand that the mathematics in the very video you were citing didn't prove a goddamn thing. It proved basically my point, okay, not your point. Okay, this guy here, he's got... Let's go back a little further in the video because he moves the diagram up and down. I mean, clearly in the diagram, he's pointing out the momentum in a direction, okay, and that the total momentum is going to have to equal this in the end. The velocities are going to have to add up, okay, and that's the truth. And what you're talking is just shit. All right, so anyway, enough of a video and such. So, look, I appreciate people making counter-arguments. It's fine. You got your own little stupid theories. But my obligation is only to argue with conventional evidence and the conventional interpretation of the conventional evidence. Now, if you want to do some special experiments, that's fine with me. If you want to show your magical XY direction energy being created somewhere, go ahead and show me the experiment where it's created. All right? But otherwise, you're just talking shit to say that it happens, because it doesn't happen in the real physical universe. And so for you to assume that everybody knows that, of course, you can create free momentum in the Y direction and conserve all of the energy in the X direction. No problem. Yes, of course, there's a problem. That doesn't happen in reality. All right, the total, all the energy in both directions has to be conserved. You start with 0 in the Y direction and, say, 10 in the X direction. You have to finish, okay, with a total of 10. It can have 5 in the Y and 5 in the X. You can have any relationship you want to make. 10, 8, and 2. Okay, only 2 left in the X direction and 8 in the Y direction. It can be lots of configurations, but it has to total 10, and that's all it can total. You can't make any free Y direction vectors. You have to take them out of the X component of the energy because that's the only energy you had. You had 0 in the Y, so you can't use Y direction to create Y direction. Fucked hard. Anyway, so till the next time. Like I said, make arguments. Yes, arguments are good, but these aren't good arguments. They're shitty arguments. They fail overtly and obviously. So do better, please. And certainly if you're going to cite Farley again, I'll just block your IP. And so this has been a DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Till the next time and such.